the year. Local businesses need your help more than ever. When you spend $100 at a locally owned business, $68 out of that $100 stays right here in our community. For more information about the Champaign Center Partnership, visit them on their website at champagnecenter.com, or you can give them a call at 217-352-2400.
Hi, Champaign County's own native child, Tom Baudette, here for the American value of wearing pants in public. Well, not just pants, but face coverings, too. You might have heard there's a pandemic going around. It's on a hard upswing in Champaign County again, and even healthy-looking people can spread it. Pretty people, ugly people, anyone. So for your friends and neighbors, remember to keep your distance from others. Wear a mask when you go out. And don't forget your pants, either. Police are real sticklers on that.
This is WEFT 90.1 FM radio. This is the program where we are at. This is a pre-recorded show. The date is Monday, September 21st. A reminder, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And that concludes this edition of Where We're At. My name is Ben Theobald. This is WEFT 90.1 FM Radio. Alan Axelrod, a DSA, Democratic Socialist of America, and activist here in Champaign, wanted to read a letter directed to Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker about the no Ameren shutoffs. So you will be hearing Alan Axelrod.
An open letter to Governor J.B. Pritzker by Alan Max Axelrod, campaign lead of no Ameren shutoffs. All persons referred to by name in this letter, except for Governor J.B. Pritzker, have consented. Robin Brown is a black woman in Champaign, and her utilities were shut off on September 18th, 2020. When I asked how utility shutoffs affected her, Robin Brown replied, "Simple. I've had to give away and separate my children." A few weeks earlier, the Carbondale Municipal Government shut off water service for Georgia De La Garza, an indigenous woman and board member of Our Illinois Revolution, while she was at the height of a coronavirus fever. Due to Governor J.B. Pritzker's inaction, utility shutoffs have been allowed across our state. From Carbondale to Macomb, Ameren, Illinois has begun utility shutoffs. This is needless greed and nothing else. Their profits per share increased 36% from quarter two of 2019 to quarter two of 2020. Quarter two contains the months of April, May, and June, when the unemployment rate was at the zenith in Illinois. Our unemployment rate continues to be over 10% in our state as of the latest publicly available data. Our state's unemployment rate is over 200% higher in Illinois from last year, while utility subsidies from the state increased up to 49%. We have, at a minimum, a 150% deficit in assistance available to struggling Illinoisans. Also, Ameren Illinois' utility assistance program is woefully insufficient, covering approximately up to 16,000 households when upwards of 80,000 are likely facing utility shutoffs. Nicor Gas has also stated publicly that 152,000 customers are more than 60 days behind on utility bills. This literally affects hundreds of thousands of households in our state of Illinois. In the face of these figures, Ameren Illinois' public relations strategy has collapsed. Their staff have taken recently to dodging media questions about the number of utility shutoffs. This is akin to shushing someone as they are being choked to death. Ameren Corporation has shown themselves to be a bad faith actor in attempting to shut off utilities four times in Illinois since Ameren, Missouri resumed utility shutoffs on August 3rd. Additionally, non-democratic municipal utilities in Illinois have been disconnecting water services in a short-sighted attempt to address the economic impact of the pandemic on their budget rather than prioritize the safety of our residents. This is unacceptable and constitutes a failure in leadership, not only of the municipalities who have done this, but Governor J.B. Pritzker, who knowingly allowed this to happen. Governor J.B. Pritzker can still stop this from affecting hundreds of thousands of households. Governor J.B. Pritzker could have stopped this from happening altogether in Illinois, despite Illinois being the sixth most populous state and with the fifth largest gross domestic product in the United States of America. There are at least 20 states ahead of us, constituting over 40% of the country, with mandatory moratoria on utility shutoffs, as reported by the National Energy Assistance Directors. Our Democratic governor, J.B. Pritzker, is joined by Republican governors in Texas and Florida as the three governors in the country who are putting the most people at risk of utility shutoffs during the pandemic, according to data provided by Carbon Switch. Governor J.B. Pritzker's office has had ample time and space to act. His office was first contacted in late July by organizations as they joined the No Ameren Shutoffs campaign. In August, Governor J.B. Pritzker was urged by the Urbana mayor to extend the moratoria on evictions and utility shutoffs at his August 13, 2020 press conference. He was also contacted by Drake Mateer, who was present at the same press conference. In September, Governor J.B. Pritzker's office has been urged by numerous Democratic Party, union, and public officials, in addition to activists, over a variety of media and actions. While Governor J.B. Pritzker issued numerous eviction moratorium extensions by executive order, he has yet to issue an executive order enacting a utility shutoffs moratorium over this time period. At a time when Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan is under investigation for corruption involving utilities, it is concerning that Governor J.B. Pritzker has been wholly silent in the public setting on utility shutoffs in Illinois until recently. Governor J.B. Pritzker's public silence was finally broken when he was nonviolently confronted by members of the Western Illinois Democratic Socialists of America at his September 18, 2020 afternoon press conference. Governor J.B. Pritzker held a press conference in the town of Macomb that day where community members' utilities were already shut off and said Macomb's census response rates is still below where it was 10 years ago, and then broadly cited COVID-19 without mentioning utility shutoffs. A member of Western Illinois DSA then asked Governor J.B. Pritzker in front of journalists, "Will you stop utility shutoffs?" Governor J.B. Pritzker's response was, "It is my intention to continue to lean on them to do the right thing. I must say that though that many of them have stepped forward to do the right thing on their own. Some slightly more reluctant than others, but they have come to the table and we are going to continue to work on that." This was insufficient, not only because Governor J.B. Pritzker was speaking in a town where utilities have already been shut off, but also because he could stop it with an executive order. The Illinois Commerce Commission even said this to one of our callers a few weeks ago, and while they have corrected previous misstatements, they have made no such correction indicating that this is likely factual. For this reason, Western Illinois Democratic Socialists of America told Governor J.B. Pritzker, "Don't ask nicely, use your governor power." As reported in Central Illinois Proud, people in the crowd then began chanting, "No utility shutoffs," and Pritzker was escorted away by staff. This response from Governor Pritzker, admittedly, constitutes an improvement from him and his staff. The previous week in Decatur, where the municipal government has also already shut off water to residents, his security staff threatened to call the police on a Central Illinois Democratic Socialists of America member for holding a sign saying "No Ameren shutoffs." Governor J.B. Pritzker's security then tried to characterize Cameron Williams, a co-chair of Central Illinois Democratic Socialists of America and a Black community member, as getting aggressive when Cameron was attempting de-escalation. After the press conference, Governor J.B. Pritzker used an alternate exit as "No Ameren Shutoffs J.B." echoed in the nearby Decatur Public Library lobby. That same day, last week, members of the Illinois State University Young Democratic Socialists of America and the Bloomington Normal Democratic Socialists of America were ignored at another press conference. In Springfield that same day last week, Sangamon County Board candidate Nick Dodson handed Governor J.B. Pritzker's staff a postcard that cited publicly reported statistics that 1 in 5 Springfield households are behind on utility bills. All of these interactions described above with Governor J.B. Pritzker and his staff are documented by members of the No Ameren Shutoffs campaign. Governor J.B. Pritzker's prolonged evasion of addressing utility shutoffs indicates an inexcusable pattern of behavior which cynically politicizes Illinoisans' pandemic safety. On other issues, such as the delaying of high school sports, Governor Pritzker insists he is following the guidance of experts. It is worth, therefore, reminding Governor J.B. Pritzker of the 2007 analysis by the Congressional Research Service entitled Pandemic Influenza, an Analysis of State Preparedness and Response Plans, which opens with, states are the seat of most authority for public health emergency response. Much of the actual response falls to local officials. Further, a 2008 analysis by the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy Group at the University of Minnesota entitled Pandemic Influenza, Electricity and the Coal Supply Chain, Addressing Crucial Preparedness Gaps in the United States, expanded on the importance of the 2007 analysis in this excerpt. Requested by Congress and conducted by Lister et al., considered multiple aspects of pandemic planning at the state level. While the authors highlighted many areas that need improvement, of most concern was the lack of planning for service continuation outside of public health and healthcare. They found that only 7 out of 51, their analysis included the District of Columbia, state documents mentioned plans for continuation of such essential services as utilities, Lister 2007. Essential services, similar to critical products, are ones we depend on for health and safety. Such services are mostly taken for granted until a disruption occurs. Utilities, including power companies that provide electricity, are prime examples of essential services. During Governor J.B. Pritzker's prolonged silence, other institutions and public officials have spoken out about the need for utility shutoffs. The Macon County Democratic Party issued a resolution in early September calling on Governor J.B. Pritzker to extend the utility shutoffs moratorium and to reinstate utility services. A few weeks later, water shutoffs occurred in their county as Governor J.B. Pritzker remained silent. The county recorder and clerk of Jackson County, the chair of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, a city councilman in Bloomington, a president of Local 2420 in District 12 of the United Mine Workers Union, and several candidates for office have all also spoken publicly or sent written communication to Governor J.B. Pritzker on this issue. Most notably, the Illinois Commerce Commission unanimously signed a letter on September 4th urging utility corporations in Illinois to suspend utility shutoffs through March of 2021. The Illinois Commerce Commission commissioners includes 2 Republican-appointed commissioners, as well as a chair whose father-in-law is alleged to have been involved in the bribery scheme with Commonwealth Edison. Yet they unanimously agreed in their signed letter that utility shutoffs must be suspended. So why doesn't Governor J.B. Pritzker act? Since the ICC's September 4th letter, Ameren, Illinois sent out more utility disconnect notices at least on September 11th, 15th, and 17th, as well as shut off Robin Brown's utilities in Champaign. Back in March, Governor J.B. Pritzker seemed to take a strong stance for protecting Illinoisans during the pandemic when he stood up to the president on Twitter. At 9:50 p.m. on March 14, 2020, Governor J.B. Pritzker tweeted, "The federal government needs to get its S at pound sign T together. Now, you all know what that spells." As evinced by Governor J.B. Pritzker's continued inaction on utility shutoffs, this was, unfortunately, a selective stand for the people of Illinois. This is unacceptable. In Governor J.B. Pritzker's silence these past 2 months, the No Ameren Shutoffs campaign stopped Ameren, Illinois from shutting off power 3 times. They previously intended to have utility shutoffs happen on August 11th, September 4th, and September 11th. The No Ameren Shutoffs campaign is a $0, all-volunteer, statewide, grassroots campaign of over 30 member organizations spanning from Carbondale to Chicago, and its sole purpose is stopping utility shutoffs. Each victory that we have had to have is a needless failure of your leadership, Governor J.B. Pritzker. It is past time for you to act, and act urgently. Utility shutoffs are undoubtedly stymieing the census response rates, whose deadline is in a week. There is zero reason for someone to fill out the census in a state that has recklessly abandoned them in their darkest hour. Your office has no valid excuse. Stop misappropriating your staff time to draft excuses and to instead dutifully serve Illinoisans as you promised to do. And if you only want to cynically defeat the current president, then you must recognize the mass voter suppression issue utility shutoffs also represent. Inaction in our state by your office provides a further pretense for the other 28 or so states who have allowed utility shutoffs to resume. Carbon Switch is widely cited as estimating that there are 34.5 million households at risk of a utility shutoff. That is more than one in four households in our entire country. Due to our dysfunctional federal government, the buck stops with you. Hey, JB, get your S at pound sign T together and lead. Sincerely, Alan Max Axelrod, No Ameren Shutoffs, campaign lead.
I just want to say thank you to Alan and all the local activists and organizations. On November 23rd, 2012, WEFT Champaign was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, to serve the public interest as a public trustee until December 1st of 2020. WEFT's current license will expire on that date, December 1st, 2020. We have filed an application for license renewal with the FCC. A copy of this application is available for inspection at www.fcc.gov. WEFT's application contains information concerning the station's performance over the last eight years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and or whether the station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by November 1st, 2020. I believe November 1st, that's a Sunday, so we got a couple of months, so just letting you know. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at 113 North Market Street, so 113 North Market Street, Champaign, Illinois, or may be obtained from the FCC in Washington, D.C. You can go to the website www.fcc.gov. Again, www.fcc.gov. Due to the risk to our volunteers and the uncertainty of our local economy, WFT chose to cancel our spring pledge drive. As we move forward through this time of great and hopeful change, we encourage you to take this opportunity to renew your WEFT membership or contribute for the first time. Please consider participation in our efforts to remain a viable, strong, and independent forum for inspiration, education, and entertainment. Please visit our website, weft.org, click on support, or you can type in weft.org/support. Contribute what you are able, either a one-time contribution or as a sustaining member. Your support allows us to make continued investments in the programming you count on. Again, the website is weft.org. Go to support, and thank you for your generosity. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates.
I am talking with Bo Barbin, who is running for Champaign County Board District 3. Bo, first let me just say thanks for coming on WEFT. I know we're living in kind of dealing with unprecedented, unfortunate times with still the pandemic.
Yeah. No, thank you for letting me come on.
So Bo, why did you decide to run for Champaign County Board?
I was kind of talked into it at the behest of some friends and fellow activists into doing so because, well, they were kind of like, hey, you know, there's no Democrat running for this district, so like, you want to do it? And I was like, I don't really like politics. They're like, well, you can still hate it and also be a part of this here and trying to help people. And I'm like, okay. And if anything, you know, it's kind of serve as something to help catalyze other efforts, even if I don't win, you know, we can try and serve to catalyze other efforts in the community and try and, you know, rally around and try and kind of find other activists in the community that are interested in organizing outside of the electoral politics.
And you're a grad student at the University of Illinois, correct?
Yeah, so I am, this is my second year of my PhD in agricultural and biological engineering at the University of Illinois. I got my master's degree and my bachelor's degree in the same program. And so this will be like my, I've been in college for like, 8 years? This will be my ninth year.
How have you been balancing being a grad student, studying, and also running for county board? How that must make you very busy, I imagine.
As a grad student, I'm already like, my time is nothing but a commodity now, as it is in this sort of like society we have. But when you said running, I was first thinking, I was like, and you're also running on the Illinois Track and Field Club. And I'm like, yes, I am, man. Shameless shout out to my Illinois Track and Field Club, best track and field club in the NIRCA. Which is like NCAA, but for clubs. But anyway, sorry, I had to give that shameless shout out. It's a heck of a time because I'm also a teaching assistant. I'm also doing research. I'm taking my own class. I'm taking classes. And, I haven't been so much this year, but last year I was the Stewart's co-chair for the Graduate Employees Organization, which is the union that represents teaching assistants and graduate assistants at the University of Illinois. And so, that forced me to get more organized, and it's definitely a lot of work. But after kind of going to seeing kind of like how the county board operates, I've watched their videos, seeing how their Urbana City Council and the Champaign City Council operate, how much meetings they have, I'm like, dang, this is just kind of like, when I was really, 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 really active in the union last year, this is the same thing. So, it's a heck of a ride given this pandemic right now. I'd especially say because of like my TA work, because like my students are having a hard time with this kind of format. And I'm trying to open my doors a little bit more virtually speaking, to make sure they have access to me. But I won't say it's not a struggle. This definitely is. But I feel like I'm managing a lot better now that we had a trial by fire in the spring when this first all started.
What issues matter or do you think are really important that to you for the Champaign County Board? Are there any issues that come to mind?
Yeah, that's a good question because there's a lot of issues that can always come. There's a lot of issues to be considered, but to be concise, because I will go off the rails. If allowed to do so.
Sure.
I think probably the biggest thing, and I don't like saying it because it sounds kind of like it almost sounds like a party talking point, but it's the case for everyone. It's not the case, not for everyone, but for a lot of people, is people on the county board play a lot of politics. And this isn't just county board members. This is also people that are involved in the county government. When they're coming up with making decisions, in the past, there have been instances of inaccurate estimates provided by certain county officials. And then the people just take them at face value. And they don't really, question it. Or maybe they do question it to a certain extent, but it's really, you're going down the wrong rabbit hole here. And all you find is just a bunch of dirt. You don't get that rabbit. Responsible government means we have to have responsible checks on each other's spending and, a very nuanced and intensive critique of what's being presented to us. So basically the one example that you're going to hear a lot from me, because extensive nuance and critique of myself and others is something that I really try and adhere to. Sheriff Dustin, I feel like I always botch his last name, Huerman. I heard somebody pronounce it like Huerman or whatever. I don't know. But the sheriff of Champaign County, he overestimated the cost of incarcerating individuals in other counties, like incarcerating them somewhere else than our county jail by a factor of 2, which like just caused this whole like budgetary panic of like, well, we have all these, prisoners in there. How do we treat this jail situation? Cause now we need to have more, beds cause we don't want to ship them out. That's essentially what they're doing. They're shipping people out. Like you're also spending money transporting them to and from these facilities. And it's kind of wild. Mm. But
Yeah, did you have any comments on the jail situation? Because there's the downtown jail and then the satellite jail. And I've usually had any comments on what exactly should be done about the whole jail situation.
Well, and obviously, if I'm elected to county board, I got to work this out with my other county board representatives. Yeah. It's going to be a team effort to do so. But like, you know, to me, what I always hear is, you know, get rid of the downtown jail. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, okay, I'm down with that. And it's like, and then less beds in the county jail. So yeah, I'm sorry, I want to make sure I clarify. Downtown jail, they want to tear it down. County jail, I want to make sure I didn't mix up the words. County jail, less beds. And then I'm kind of like, well, what does less beds mean? And then what it typically is, it's just a euphemism for still putting millions of dollars into the jail project. And I'm kind of like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold up a second. What? There's suddenly this whole thing of feeling like abolition, you know, and I'm just kind of like, what's going on here? And then it turns out to not be that case. And I'm like, so, you know, obviously there's like certain criteria and stuff that have to be met by like the accordance with like state laws and regulations. And I'm like, okay. Or like state and federal laws and regulations that have to be met. I'm like, okay, yeah. But like, here's the deal. And Carol Ammons even pointed this out last year when they tried to bring up like, you know, the multimillion dollar project. Was it last year or was it more than a year ago? I don't know. This year has like, so far these like last six, like 9 months have lasted like.
This, especially with, you know, since this, well, we're 6 months into this pandemic and it's really hard to keep track of time.
I've aged 20 years.
Yeah,
but Carol brought up, she's like, you know, people are like, well, we need more beds in the satellite jail. And Carol Ammons brought up, you know, with the new legislation on like cannabis laws that are going to be passed, half of the, you know, like I don't know if it was half, but it was like basically it was just like there's going to be several dozen inmates, or at least yeah, that are not going to be put in there because of cannabis law, because of the change in the cannabis laws and how marijuana is considered. Like, people are in jail for like low level, like drug offenses and like nonviolent stuff. And I'm just like, that's wild, especially like during a pandemic. But I think, you know, whatever is considered, you have to take the community in mind. How is this going to hurt? Yeah, no, and people say like, well, think about how is it going to help? And I'm like, you can see, think about how it's going to help, but you also need to think about what decisions, how they're going to hurt groups of people. And so like what we see is like, you know, and this is across the entire United States, but like, you know, we see it here too. There's a disproportionate amount of people in the, from, you know, that are Black and people of color, and that are arrested and detained and incarcerated. And it's not that hard to find out like about that data. Like I think they even had like a racial justice task force even published stuff about this in like 2015. And you know, typically there's people that get arrested and thrown in there because they're homeless. Not because necessarily because like, oh, you've committed a crime and being homeless, but like literally, you know, when you're homeless, it's not a tenable situation to always be doing the things that, you know, follow the law. So like loitering or just like stuff like that, or, you know, public disturbance, they'll detain you. And, you know, sometimes what ends up happening is that's the only way like some people can get shelter.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
And the issue of cash bail too.
Cash bail is a freaking scam. Like, I don't know how to say it. Like, cash bail is like a whole thing. Why are we extorting people for money to be like, right, you know, to not spend the night in jail? Which like, it's just sort of like two things here. One, cash bail, like, you know, if you're rich or if you have enough money, congrats, you don't have to spend the night in the county jail. But at the same time, for like being housed in the jail means that's coming also out of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want, you know, ideally you're going to just, yeah, you know, ideally everyone pays their bail and, you know, there's not as many people that have to be housed in the jail. But problem is the majority of people that are getting arrested are, you know, on like are underemployed, as in they don't have enough jobs to really get by, or they're unemployed. They don't have a job. They can't pay for it. They can barely eke out a living, let alone survive. And, you know, how are they going to pay their bail? So just like the May 31st mass arrests that we saw, typically some of the stuff that they have there, the bond would be $500. Mm-hmm. They said the people are like, oh, well, we can get a community fund together and, you know, easily bail that out. And then the judge just like saw that and was just like, fine, we'll make that $5,000. And it's just wild. But the community, you know, came together and bailed out, I think most of the people that were arrested, because it's just during this time in the pandemic, putting people in a jail is just a super, super carrier event, essentially. And it's, you know, if you want to take the selfish view of like, you know, well, you know, they're not going to be around to bother me about it. And it's like, well, eventually people do get released from jail. So if they had it and then they're released from jail at some point, you know, it's just further worsening the pandemic. And also, like, I don't care about what they had done. You don't extrajudicially kill people. And so to subject them to pandemic conditions and potentially risk them to a virus that could, you know, either alter their health, like in the best case, it only just alters their health permanently, or in the worst case, it kills them, is just sort of, you know, I don't know, man. I don't get how people can lack so much empathy, but that's just me. And I'm starting to go off on a tangent. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I mean, look, these are very unprecedented times with the pandemic. And I think right now, especially for nonviolent crimes and nonviolent offenders, we ideally, especially right now with the pandemic, right now, those people, you know, having them in a small area, you know, in a jail cell, that, you know, that's just kind of a, I would say, a violation of human rights, even to have them in a small enclosed space. And and I think I'm hoping as a country, you know, as we're kind of looking, you know, I know we're seeing these defund the police movements, and please feel free to comment on that too, with how we're looking at our justice system. I've sort of did bring this up with Alan Axelrod about what other, because there is a, I think it was Camden, New Jersey. They kind of reformed their jail situation. And it, from what I understand, it's been somewhat successful with how they, or their policing. Maybe I'm thinking more of their with what they did with their police. And in terms of, to go back to the, how we do things like cash bail, I think, and you know, if I may comment on it, my opinion is,
yeah, go all in, man. Dive in, Ben.
Yeah, you know, on this program, I try not to shy away from my views, but I think we definitely need, you know, we in this country, we lead in numbers of people incarcerated. And I think that's obviously, and a lot of it is because a lot of people just can't afford cash bail. They're just in there because they don't have money. And that unfortunately disproportionately affects generally Black people, Latinos, Native Americans. Well, you know, and that's just, you know, essentially it's just you're in there because you can't afford, because you're poor, you know, you just were born in, you know, You've been had unfortunate circumstances, essentially. You just don't have enough money. It's not essentially that you did anything wrong. It's just you just don't, and you know, who knows what the situation, you know, depending on the situation is. Look, I used to be a crime reporter. Some people are just in there because their license might have been suspended, or they didn't re-register their license, and maybe they didn't know because they were busy, you know, with their job. You know, they're working however many jobs or whatever.
They're working 9 to 9. You know, Dolly Parton talks about 9 to 5, but we talk. Yeah. You know, it's like, now we're in that 9 to 9, Dolly. Yeah. 24 hours. Don't know if my boss cares if I'm dead or alive.
Yeah. Well, and let's just face it, the minimum wage hasn't. Mm-hmm. Is not enough in the state of Illinois, the federal minimum wage, but really all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they might be working however many jobs or a really long job, and that when you're working a lot, you can't pay attention to a lot of things like, oh, my driver's license was up and I didn't go to the DMV and re-register. So like if they were driving on a suspended license, they might have not have known. But yeah,
it happens, because like so 2 years ago, god, that was 2 years ago, two years and a month ago, I had like, this is going to seem like a giant jump in tangent, probably because it is. Yeah, yeah. I had a benign mass. It was called, schwannoma. It was about 1.5 inches in diameter. That was on the nerve of like one of the nerve sheaths that controls like the movement and feeling of my tongue. Long story short, got it removed. It was a whole hassle.
Yeah.
But like for like, you know, on the pain medication that I was on, I was out of it. Out of it for like 2 weeks. And even then, like after that, I was coming off of it. And for like basically like the entire month of August in 2018 was just like a blur. And so like I ended up having to like ask my parents for like help with keeping track of things, especially the insurance at that time, because of the whole ordeal that I had to go through. And but that's, I have someone that I can rely on. I have like a safety net of like, you know, of family support that I can rely on, and also to a small extent financially, I have like a small financial net through them. But several people do not have that, and my parents are lucky enough, you know, I'm lucky enough to have parents who are also lucky enough to be able to find this situation so that I could get this. But like, you know, people shouldn't be like, you know, one like, you know, like basically one step away from like just falling to rock bottom. And so like what we see a lot then is like people who cannot afford cash bail and stuff like that. It's just an unnecessary punishment. And I guess that was really sort of like, it's ADHD is a heck of a thing, man. You'll go everywhere and then back. But like, yeah, it's, people don't have that financial net, or people don't necessarily have that family support or other support that they can rely on. So like, why are we forcing it then on individuals who can't, you know, be able to pay cash bail and just leave it up to like the circumstances that you were born into? I was born into this family. I'm lucky to have very loving and supportive parents. Not everyone has that. And I don't think then that we should be, you know, basically discriminating on the fact of people's like economic status as well as their race and the color of their skin. Just because someone's got more melanin than me doesn't mean I think that their treatment should then be they should be thrown into jail, when I've seen people with a lot less melanin let off with a pat on the wrist. But.
Did you want to talk about, I usually ask this question to all county board candidates. Did you want to talk about your district, like what it covers, what part of Champaign County is your district?
Yeah. So my district is District 3. That goes all the way up through Stanton Township. Kind of goes a little bit part of the way into Somer Township, just a little. Like, I think it hits the most populated place, I think, in the Somer Township, at least population density wise, is this one trailer park. I cannot remember the name. That's kind of like in the north side, or kind of like smack dab in the middle of Somer Township, along sort of like not I-57, but the route that takes you right to, I'm blanking on the name, takes you right to Rantoul. And then that stretches all the way over from that. So it goes just across Stanton Township, and then it goes across all of Ogden Township, which includes like the Royal area and Ogden area. And Ogden is my hometown, born and raised here for now 27 years. My birthday was last week.
Oh, happy birthday. Yeah.
I'm 27 and I still feel like I'm very much like a 12-year-old.
Well, mine's actually next Saturday, the 26th. So.
Oh, no way.
yeah, I turned 30, so.
Nice. Well, happy early, or super duper early birthday, Ben. Yeah. I'll be sure to actually wish you a proper birthday on that day. September birthdays, man. We know what's up. We know what's good. And then that stretches. I also have like Philo Township, Sydney Township, St. Joseph Ogden Township, Crittenden, Raymond, and Ayers Township, along with South Homer Township, which I still need to look up into the history of why it's called South Homer Township when there's no actual South Homer, there's just Homer. Anyways, then I do have a little bit of Urbana, mainly the rural part of Urbana Township, because there's City of Urbana, and then there's Cunningham Township, and then there's Urbana, which is weird because Urbana is like the area outside of actual, like the city. But it has a little bit of that, and then I cover a couple of precincts in Cunningham. I think it's like a little bit of like 17 and 18, but like Urbana Precinct 4, and then, which is like densely populated. But, you know, it's like Behringer Commons kind of area. And then all the way over to that one, like along 150 on the north side to like the Casey's gas station in Urbana. And then anybody that's like north of Washington and then east of Dotson Drive in Urbana, like, those people are in my district. So it's kind of weird. I know that they did that to try and equally split up the populations between the districts, so there wasn't kind of like a population imbalance in representation.
Just a reminder, fill out your census.
Fill out your census. Just do it, because then, you know, that's a lot of federal grant money. But I have a fun thing to say about the census and with which to fill it out later we have time.
It's about the nursing home. I know it's already been kind of taken care of, but it was kind of
controversial.
It was very controversial. So I don't know if you had an opinion on it or if anything that you wanted to say about it.
I don't know if I have quite as educated as opinion as I want at this moment in time, I'll be honest. It's kind of weird, because when it comes to like anything where we're caring for folks, I kind of, you know, you have to be, I don't want to say delicate about the situation, because then that sounds like we're just trying not to hurt anybody's feelings. When I say delicate, I mean, I should say, that's not the word. I said, so you need to be truly considerate about the people that it's impacting. Because, you know, you're putting people who are at a more risk for things.
Especially right now,
like, it's just, I don't know. I would like, I'd say I'd want a more educated opinion on it, and I'd have to read up more on it. But I remember that, like, that sort of had already been settled and then a done deal before I even started running for office. But I remember it just kind of felt like a very heartless thing to do. At the same time, you know, I don't know the situation of I didn't know the situation of the budget, how that was looking at that time. But it's just, I don't know. I just kind of like think there's resources that we have sitting around somewhere. What intergovernmental agreements can we, you know, go into to try and solve this problem? Because there's money somewhere. People got money. But in these times with the pandemic now, though, it's kind of like now you got to kind of think, do we have the money now? Where is it coming from? You know, and how are we spending it to make sure that we're actually helping people as best as they can and not just letting people make a profit off of other people?
In terms of, you know, you always hear about this, and really in all forms of, you know, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, but it's like, how are you going to work with the other party? How are you going to work with the other in terms of, but they're, you know, will you be open to bipartisanship? And do you have a comment on that or anything?
I got plenty of comments, Ben. Yeah. Don't be sorry. I think, well, so like the one thing is basically it's one thing to be partisan. It's bad to be partisan based on your party line. So like if you're voting with someone because they're a Democrat or you're voting with someone just because they're Republican and being in lockstep with your party line and towing the party line, that's wrong. However, I don't think it's bad to be partisan on the matter of issues versus loyalty. So like I'm partisan on the fact that I'm gonna throw loyalty out the window to a party anytime. I'm going to keep the state issues focus, because what my decisions do impact all the residents, whether or not they're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Socialist, you name it, you know? And so if someone's gonna stand up for, you know, the rights of workers, which I will say, statistically speaking, Democrats tend to do more often, but you know, if Republicans also want to do the same, or any politician, regardless of policy, wants to stand up for workers and our county staff, I will vote with them. If people want to make sure that we are doing the best by our residents and our constituents, I'll vote with them. If people want to stand up for human rights, you know, I do not care that party, I will stand with them. You know, like one thing was, is like, in a recent county board, when was it? It was like sometime in early August, in a recent county board, meeting, I think it was like two Democratic county board members wanted to, add another polling place to the campus, because they want to reduce the amount of lines that could potentially form if campus ends up, you know, if like they have in-person voting and stuff like that. And there was, and I'm not going to name names because I'm not going to go there yet. Mm-hmm. There was two Republican board members that did not want to do that. And they were like, it costs a lot of money. And so the Democrats made the two Democratic county board members made their case. It's like, well, it's, you know, we live in these times, here with the pandemic, and we want to make sure that, you know, there's no voter suppression. We want to make sure people are able to vote. This, you know, it's the right to vote. Yeah. You don't want to impede that in any way, shape, or form. And those two Republican folks voted no, but several other Republicans on the board voted yes. And I think that should be recognized, be like, you know, hey, they understand the situation. They listened and they acted on that informed information to kind of already have a decision pre-made because of, you know, your party stance and not your own personal informed opinion, and then also the informed opinion of others that have been given to you. And I should say expert opinions, because just because someone gives you an informed opinion, or if someone gives you an opinion from your party and then they say, well, it's a well-informed opinion, you always have to still be questioning, where is this decision, how is this decision being arrived to? But that's sort of an example of, I guess, bipartisanship, albeit maybe small, that I think is sort of like an example. Hey, we can do this. I mean, shoot, look at Decatur, like Macon County, and like I'm making, what? It's Macon County, right? I almost said McDonough, and I'm like, no, that's a whole nother county. It's Macon County where Decatur is. Libertarians and socialists, yes, socialists and libertarians are, you know, working together to fight government corruption. Like, you know, we can achieve the same thing here. I don't know why we can't do that between Republicans and Democrats or just any politicians, you know? But, you know, it's a wild time. We're sort of like got the myth that, you know, you're either a Democrat or Republican. And, you know, you can only be either or, when really, like, it's not just that dichotomy. We have a whole spectrum of political beliefs. There's people that, you know, go either or. And so, like, I mean, actually, I don't know where I was going to go with that. Oh, I mean, for instance, and this is kind of, I'm tracing back because, you know, it's what ADHD does. You want to go back to an earlier part of the conversation because you wanted to address some more details. Very detail-oriented. I apologize.
Sure, that was fine.
But, like, you know, the Champaign County Democrats were likely going to slate someone in my position, you know? Like, they were going to slate someone for me, but I took this spot. Like, I took it because I had the signatures to do so. And don't get me wrong, this isn't to say that, you know, Champaign County Democrats can't be trusted. There's good people in the Champaign County Democrats. There's some great people on there. And, like, you know, Carol Ammons has done a lot for this district. For her district, but also, like, the affecting Champaign County at large. And so, you know, but I just sort of think, you know, people ask, are you going to be towing the party line? I'm going to be like, I'm going to go with what I agree with. Mm. You know, I'm beholden to the people of this county and, you know, probably more so the people in my district. I could really care less what other politicians are going to think of me. I'm just going to work with what I'm going to work with it like I do any other project management thing, which you have to take courses on at some point during your engineering and undergrad, and also partway through kind of your master's a little bit. You know, project management is an important part. It doesn't matter what your colleagues believe, what they think, as long as they're, you know, going to work with you on getting the job done and getting the job done right. Because sometimes people get the job done fast, but they don't do the job right. Horrible tragedy.
Back April with Aaliyah Lewis with the yes. Urbana Police, been an ongoing situation, and obviously there was a video that went viral of
yep.
of her arrest, and it caused a lot of outrage. I mean, in terms of really, my question is, what do you think of this situation? What's been kind of, I take it you've been following this situation or following it as best as you can. I know it's kind of hard to really follow anything these past couple of months.
And there's a lot going on. So it's like, the thing is, it can get lost in the shuffle. But yeah. Like, you know, I go to the Urbana City Council meetings weekly, and I see like tons of community outcry in support of, you know, justice for Aaliyah Lewis, because I kind of like, you know, there is issues with like sharing the video of like a woman being brutalized, and you can talk about the subject of privacy, and I feel it was terrible what happened to her, and she was brutalized by police because, you know,
to kind of give context for the situation. There was, the police were called for, I believe, a domestic dispute, and we somehow, I know the video, all I know is that the police came and they really, from what I seen, really, unnecessarily, in fact, I would say, just went way over the line in terms of physically abused her and arrested her for, I'm not exactly sure, other than
police or
supposedly, or
she technically got charged with assaulting a police officer, I think, because allegedly she had like smacked the officer, and that was after already he tried to take her down. And I'm not gonna try and comment on like the whole of like, you know, this is what happened. I'm not gonna be the person that represents that story. I'm not gonna be, and in hindsight, yeah, I probably shouldn't even try and do too much, because you know, I'm not her lawyer. Yeah. I'm not, you know, someone that she's trusted to speak on her behalf. So I guess I'm gonna make sure that I'm refraining from trying to represent her. I will say the way that Urbana City Council has gone about this has just been very tone deaf for the most part. Mm. Aside from really Jared Miller, who has done a fantastic job of reaching out to the community and talking with folks about this, and also bringing those issues to council, and sometimes being the lone person on that council to basically take a stand on not just in the Aaliyah Lewis case, but like other things as well. So like, you know, it's wild, but like people have been coming to the Urbana City Council since that April, with just every single week, like Amina Payne, Megan McDonald, Tracy Chong. I will tell you right now, like we stand Tracy Chong, like huge Tracy Chong fan. Tracy Chong has 99% of all the receipts that have ever been in existence. Cause like, holy cow. I mean, it's not just the women that are putting in the work here. There's also men too, but I mean, just God, like there needs to be an appreciation of like, of activism that women do in this community. And, you know, at large, women do a lot. Like, I don't know if that's appreciated enough. Women do a lot. Like, they shift their whole schedules around just to make these meetings. And it's frustrating because Mayor Marlin will, you know, essentially stifle the input of these people into their own community. Like how, you know, these people live in Urbana, and there's sure there's some people, I've chimed in a couple of times, I'm from Ogden, but you know how they treat people in Urbana, because that is basically it's the Champaign-Urbana metro area. People commute there for work. You know, how they treat people in Urbana there is not just how they treat their citizens, it's how they're going to treat everybody in this county. Although when I say everybody in this county, I should say typically there's going to be a difference in enforcement between, you know, people who are white and then people who, you know, and then people of color and other minorities. But it's, you know, it's stifling this speech that is just outrageous to me. And the newest thing that they've done is Mayor Marlin has proposed basically a thing to try and stifle even more speech, saying you can only speak during you can choose to either speak on an action item or you can speak in the general comment. You can't do both. And, you know, you can't target any member, as in you can't speak negatively of any member, which I'm just kind of like, look, it's part of the job. I'm expecting if I get elected, I'm probably going to get stuff that I'm not going to like, but am I going to say, don't ever contact me again? I'm going to be like, no, these are people who are my constituents or people in the other people outside of my district whose decisions that I make will also affect them. Like, you know, I'm going to have to take it, you know? Now, I do agree with the one thing that if, you know, there's threats, obviously that shouldn't be tolerated. Threat, you know, you shouldn't be making threats to someone in a government position. I don't care who they are. I can understand that, but from what I've seen in the majority, because I've never seen that, what I've seen is people just with anger and frustration with how the Urbana City Council seems to not be wanting to listen to several people who come Monday night. And it just boggles my mind why you want to do that, because why are you in that government position then? Why are you in that elected position? I don't know. I could easily go on a tangent, but it's like, also while I'm here, anybody who's listening, who ends up listening to this, regardless of where you live, I don't care if it's Champaign County, I don't care if it's Urbana, I don't care if it's Champaign, find out when your public city council meetings are and listen in, because chances are they're going to say some like one wacky thing at least once, or at least one, there's just a lot, they're going to say some garbage thing at least once. There's always one person, whether or not it's maybe someone on the council or someone who comes in from public comment.
I will have to unfortunately stop the interview there with Bo Barber, but I will have the rest of it for next week. So please tune in to hear the rest of the interview with Bo Barber, who's running for Champaign County Board. And of course, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. Just want to let you know one more thing. There will be, the Urbana City Council will be having a meeting, a virtual online meeting. You can go to the Urbana City Council website, urbanaillinois.us. That is the URL. Or just Google City of Urbana website, and that should take you right there where you can find the agenda and what's going to be on the meeting to-do list. But yeah, feel free to look up that information if you would like. And that'll be it for this programming of Where We're At here on WEFT 90.1 FM. Please stay tuned for more programming. I'm going to play a little tune called We Made It by Reed Mathis. So please continue listening here on 90.1 FM radio, WEFT. Have a good night.
WEFT is currently offering our listeners the rare opportunity to purchase a newly created WEFT t-shirt. The t-shirt comes in four different colors, red, blue, green, or purple, with a WEFT design on the front and our program schedule on the back. Sizes medium through extra large are $20. Double extra large is slightly more at $22. Shipping is free. Limited numbers of shirts are available in popular